You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Downton Abbey After Show.
Ah, yes. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz TV After Show for Downton Abbey Season 4, or Series 4, Episode 9, a Christmas special. I'm John Comerford. I'm joined in the studio by Tamara Berg.
Tamara Berg. Hey, everybody. How are you? Glad to be back.
That's right. And our colleague, Courtney Stewart, is traveling. She's en route, not to here, but to someplace else. She will hopefully be calling in and tweeting in. And helming in the booth for us is Marissa Serafini. So thank you very much, Marissa.
Hello.
All right, lots to cover. As we said, it's a Christmas special. We'll finally get to a quick apology. I know we weren't able to do this on Christmas because of technology and people being out of the country and out of state, etc.
Out of being able to speak because I had bronchitis.
Yeah, we had all kinds of issues. We're finally getting back to it. Thank you for your patience, and we're happy to be back. And hopefully, you'll enjoy this very shortly.
We have things to talk about. Serious things to talk about, people.
He jam-packed every Julian Fellowes jam-packed this Christmas
Holy
special.
Smokes.
I think I'm assuming I read a little bit that it might have been a reaction because the last Christmas special he obviously had to kill off Dan Stevens. I'm sorry, spoiler
Matthew
alert for those of you who don't know already. Yeah. So and this was a reaction to that because this was great. In this part of it, I really loved the grandeur of it all. How many different locations we saw?
Gorgeous.
Grantham House. We saw the palace.
We've never seen before.
Oh, yeah, places we've never seen. I mean, the palace alone, the way they covered it was gorgeous. And then, of course, we had the big picnic outside. I mean, we went to a supper. We had a nightclub. I mean, there were so many things and so many different characters. Very full. I mean, expensive. It looked gorgeous.
Oh, no kidding. Teresa. Expensive.
Yeah. So that part of it, I really, really enjoyed. In fact, we don't usually get to see it twice because we see it and then we come right in here and we talk about
right.
it. So, but this time because we had some time, I was able to see it twice and I really enjoyed that part of it the second time more than the first time.
You know, one of the things that we talked about with the first episode of this series
right.
was we talked about how the cinematography was different and we were
yeah.
looking at things differently. And this was a nice way to bookend it and be able to see things that we haven't seen before and shots we haven't looked at before.
Yeah.
And it was really neat to be able to like be left with that feeling at
yeah.
the end of the series because we got a long time to wait
before we see
any more downtime.
But just speaking of the way they covered it, I loved in Grantham House where the first time we get there and we're inside and, you know, Lord Grantham's way up there and he says, do we really have to go? And then the camera's coming down. You see Cora walking down the stairs and you saw the size of it and then I just thought they covered it nicely.
Yes.
It was very, very cinematic and beautiful to look at.
There was an article in the U.S. in Parade magazine this week, January 5th, mm-hmm. to coincide with the U.S.
premiere of it, yeah,
this season.
As it finishes in England, we get to premiere it here in America.
Right. So it's a really interesting article. If you get a chance to see it, do look at it. But there were lots of things in there, and a couple of them I'll be talking about during the news. But one of the things they mention is after shocking viewers in 2012 with Matthew's death,
yes.
Julian Fellowes went in the opposite direction for season 4's finale, which he calls, quote, something and enjoyable. And I think that's exactly what it was. I got tweets from fans just as it was airing,
right.
and I had not had a chance to see it yet. And they were saying, you know, sort of, you know, that was kind of the general sense of.
Because nobody got killed off.
Well, we had been told beforehand, and we discussed this
yeah.
here, that he wasn't going to be killing off main characters.
Right.
And it was so jarring and so painful last series.
Yeah.
So it was nice to be able to just sort of relax into mm-hmm. the beauty of, you know, what kind of Christmas should be about.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So we didn't have to deal with any kind of horrible stuff.
Yeah.
Well, then he certainly succeeded in that because it was sumptuous and it was entertaining.
And, the other thing, costumes. We have to talk about the costumes
God,
a little
yeah.
bit.
They
were so gorgeous.
The
fact that we had a coming out, a presentation to
sure.
court. So, and ball after ball after ball
yeah.
coming.
Yeah.
I said Paul. With, you know, all the pretty clothes and all the beautiful jewelry and the tiaras and the, yeah. you know, gems and, you know, gloves and shoes and
uniforms.
Uniforms. Yeah, so. Right. There were several. Mm-hmm. We had the king. We had the Prince of Wales. We had yeah. Lord Grantham and you know,
yeah,
everybody decked
finery.
Out to the nines. The hats.
Oh
there was
God.
This hat, the white hat that, Madeline? I keep wanting to call her Meredith. Madeline wore on the picnic. I want that hat to the point where I was staring at it the second time I watched the show trying to figure out how can I make that hat.
Wow.
But so much beauty in the costumes. And we've talked about the costumes in the wardrobe department before. Most everything is made just for the show.
Oh,
and
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, they do make almost everything from the show. There are a few pieces that have been spotted as being recycled from other shows. Or a lot of times the wardrobe department there takes pieces of vintage clothing yeah. and incorporates them into panels of new dresses or takes the design inspiration from that piece and makes it into something new. But Rose's ball gowns were so gorgeous with that little sort of step out on the skirt. I mean, I
will defer to you on all that.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sure it was.
I'm just being a girl right now.
I think it's great, though. But no, I mean, this is the show to do that on.
Right. And the fascinators with the feathers that the girls were wearing, the debutantes were wearing.
I'm sure right now you're really wishing Courtney would call in so you could really enjoy
stuff.
This because I'm going, okay.
But so just so beautiful. Yeah. And in the past, really only Mary has gotten to be beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And boy, they spread the beauty out with a lot of the gals.
But,
and the men as well. Everybody just looked so
But Violet
handsome.
Not so happy with Martha's choices in terms of what she's wearing. Remember, I mean, that one line that she has, you know, when Martha wants to change to go to the theater.
Yes, I should hope you would, or something like that.
What I was particularly impressed by was the locations and the number of locations and how they covered. I mean, because it just looked huge on screen.
Right. And, you know, I loved the shot
Whatever the
memorial,
the picnic was. There we were in the palace.
That shot in the palace where they started on the ceiling and panned down.
Yeah,
boy, talk about because you walk into those places and that's what you do. You walk in and look
and
up
go,
and go, oh,
my God.
Good
Even
gracious!
In the museum that Mary's in with Charles.
Oh, that opening shot of the painting and then pulling back to the guy who was copying it.
Yeah, it's great, good stuff.
Just beautiful.
So for that alone, I was very, very happy, very, very fulfilled by it. I thought it was terrific.
Sumptuous and enjoyable is absolutely what he accomplished
with
that.
And plenty of other things that we can talk about, which we will right now. Let's get into it, because obviously the whole reason why they're in London is for Rose's being presented at court.
Yes.
I think that's the proper term, but if it isn't, sorry. But anyway, so that's why the American contingency there, ostensibly, but we also know the reason why they're doing is to get away from the teapot. Don't
run from the scandal.
Exactly. I love that they just we came 3,000 miles to get away from it. So stop talking about it. So, all right. So, but what I loved about the whole thing was that circumstance and just going. It just seemed so odd to me, but I loved seeing the ritual of it.
Yes.
And I was really with Mrs. Hughes when she says to Anna, you know, so I don't know why it is that a girl can turn into a woman merely by a curtsy, but apparently that's how it's done.
I don't understand how you don't get that.
I know.
Of course.
But, you know, okay. But I loved watching the whole, you know, being presented and, you have to have the woman being presented.
Right,
not a male figure presenting you at court, which I thought I didn't know that.
I didn't either. And I thought that was interesting because usually everything is so patriarchal.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you had to have a senior female
of course,
in your
who
life,
had already been presented,
a relation, presenting you was.
And just the way they read the card and then they dropped the card in the
it was
basket.
It's a little unceremonious, like, wasn't it? Didn't you think there should have been a short, well, like a child there to take it?
Talk about unceremonious. Madeline says, I hope you don't even need to powder your nose
because there's just a chamber pot behind us.
So, wow.
Those were the days.
I guess so. So with all their finery, they only got a chamber pot back there. All right. So, but anyway. So that's why everybody's there. Everybody has to come for this, or not has to, but Isabel decides to go, of course. And so,
well, and the last time that Harold was there was for Mary's wedding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not Mary, Cora's wedding.
Yeah.
So it was, it's been a while.
Yeah. So this is the setting. So this is how Julian decides to get everybody back for this occasion.
Yep.
Which is great because now we get everybody in town. And first thing I wanted to talk about was the caper. The letter caper.
Okay, yes.
Because for me, this was the most fun part about the show.
It was.
I just love that the monarchy rests on the shenanigans and the scheming and plotting of the Crowleys.
Right?
over the letter.
And the Granthams, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, Grantham House or the Crowleys. So anyway, let's talk about it because, you know, first thing that we know about it is that, you know, Rose is out with Madeline and they mm-hmm. bump into her father at the nightclub.
Who is a lord.
Who's a lord, Lord Asgard. And, you know, Rose just says, look, let's just say hi and move on. And they can't. And Madeline rightly points out that guess who's with them? Who else could it be? The Prince of Wales.
The Prince.
And they go over and introduce themselves. And we also get introduced to Frieda Dudley Ward, Julian borrowing from history there, which is mm-hmm, great. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know.
It's a scandal in itself that she's even there. But then she gets involved in the scandal.
Right. And, you know, of course, this picks up right from other things that had happened in real life. So, mm-hmm. but this one, of course, they want to do something about because they according to Lord Grantham, they're responsible for the entire the ghastly debacle. As
right.
Okay. So anyway, so let's just talk a little bit about what happened. So, you know, they meet the prince and they meet Frieda Dudley Ward. And, you know, she takes a liking to Rose. Frieda takes a liking to Rose. And later on, you know, they're at the palace for the supper, I guess. And they're all – Rose is talking about the letter that Frieda received. We don't know who from whom or
anything.
Well,
I assumed that it was from the prince to Frieda. Right. And it was, you know, funny but scandalous. Mm-hmm. So,
and they mistakenly say it in front of, well, Harold there, Lord Asgarth there, and of course the slippery, slimy
Samson
and Terrence, I believe, Terrence Samson, whatever his first name is, I don't know, but Samson, and you know, then he's left alone, and you know, because everybody thinks he's above board, and of course he rummages through her purse and takes the letter.
Nice. Now, first of all, just quickly, do you think he was looking for this letter or he was looking for something?
You know, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, he's just looking for money.
That's what I thought the first time.
Yeah, because that's what he seems like. But
right.
Then
he
just doesn't seem clever enough to know that the letter was there or what it really meant because it was such an offhand comment. And it
between the girls?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter either way. I was just curious to know what
you thought
about
it. Yeah, I thought it was just because he's just sleazy enough to steal money.
Right.
But then he came across this and it's like,
right.
Whoa.
You know, here's a bigger paycheck.
Of course. And of course, Frieda freaks out. Mm-hmm. She asked Rose, did you take it for a prank? It's okay if you did. I just, mm-hmm. what happened? And now we're off to the races because Rose feels horrible. She asked Lord Grantham if Samson is the kind of person who would do something dishonorable. Clearly not knowing.
Not only do I think he would, I know he has.
And that, forget it now, because now Lord Grantham realizes, oh my God, this is terrible. And he, being the monarchist that he is, he realizes if we don't stop this, it's going to take down the monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least put it in a horrible light.
Right.
And he goes, that the public just wants to have a happy marriage in the palace,
monarchy,
palace, which is true, still to this day.
It is still true
to this
day.
So anyway. And then the plot is hatched. And the scheming, that was the best part about it. When they're gathered there with Cora and
having
Mary.
Having the family meeting.
Yeah, and there's like, how are we going to do this?
Meeting.
Okay, no, we'll have a poker game. Here's how, no, we'll entice
no,
him.
No, 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 there's going to be theater.
No, wait, no, no, they might go for that, yeah.
Wait, what if he wants to go to the theater? Yeah. He'll never go to the theater.
Oh,
he wants to play poker.
God.
Could I play poker? I'd like to play poker.
And that, for me, was the best part because they're so worried about the monarchy. And it dependent upon what happens.
Who's
in this
gonna
meeting.
Come to the poker game?
And of course Mary says, oh, I'll lie. I don't have any problem.
That was such a great moment. Oh, yeah. I have no problem lying.
So of course the plan is get Samson away with a poker game and keep Violet and Martha away, distracted, whatever,
yes.
So they can get a forged entry into Samson's place, search for the letter, get it back, and save the monarchy. That's the plan.
Excellent plan.
I said,
what could
go
wrong?
It's just like the A-team here in America. You know what I mean? So, okay. So everything goes okay to plan in terms of, you know, they get Samson distracted. He's playing poker. And, of course, he's saying how he's glad Gregson isn't there because he, you know.
I don't know if he plays strictly to Hoyle.
Yeah, Hoyle standards. Anyway, so they go to Samson's. They don't find this thing. And my favorite line is it's the whole thing about the revolting sock drawer.
Oh, Rose,
yeah,
right, of
Rose.
Course, well, of course I'm going to go look in his sock drawer first because that's where you would hide something you don't ever want anybody to see because mm-hmm. that's just gross.
I know it is. And to this day, I can tell you that most people hide things in their sock drawer.
It's true.
And that's the first place everybody's going to look.
I know.
All right, so anyway, but they don't find
anything.
All you
cat burglars.
And of course, who do they go to for the forgery? I like the way Lord Grantham, he brings Bates in and he goes, in your time away, which is a lovely way of putting it, I guess.
Talking about his incarceration.
Yeah. Did you ever come across a forger?
Bates.
Yeah, I mean, he was so coy about it, you know, doesn't let on that it's him. And I, you know, did but you know, did you in at all think for a second that he actually knew somebody, or did you know that he it was going to be him?
No, from the very beginning, I thought it was he who
you
would
do
it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So I thought it would be
just because he's a man of many talents.
Yeah, that we don't know them all, but we don't.
Yeah,
so and he does, of course, and he does a great job apparently because it gets them in. And of course, but it doesn't prove fruitful because they don't find the letter. But
right.
I like the way it gets wrapped up right away because, you know, Carson's the one that tells Bates, look, the letter worked terrifically, but we didn't find it. And right away, he knows. And
what he must do.
What he must do. He's going to help him put on the coats, which is, you know, strange, but everybody's okay with it. He finds Samson's coat, helps him on with it. Picks his pocket.
With one of his other many talents.
There you go. And I thought, this is great. Now, who knew? He knew so much. You know, like you say, if you go to prison, you learn how to be a felon. That's the best place to
best place
best
to
training.
Learn, apparently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the reaction when Lord Grantham, and he presents that letter to Mary and Rose.
In the sitting room.
Oh,
that was
my
one
God.
Of my favorite moments of the entire
episode. It was such a
episode.
Genuine little, that elation from everybody was great.
It was. And we so infrequently see Mary even evoking any kind of emotion at all.
Yeah.
For her to be so surprised, so shocked, and to show it was how the rest of us felt when we saw that.
That was terrific.
That second.
And of course, and he saves the day. And of course, that leads into why Mary decides not to go on. But before we get into those things, we will come back to that. The other thing that I wanted to speak about was, I like that he explains how he knew it was there. He tells Lord Grantham, "Look, if I had a very important
document,
I wouldn't keep it at home. Wouldn't leave it at home. I'd have it with me on my person."
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because the letter, not the letter, but the ticket stub, was something that he kept in his coat, which was just – there was that little tie-in,
so
which was kind of strange. It was like, first of all, why would he even keep that thing?
Thank you.
Which was strange to me because he seemed smarter than that, unless it was some weird way, some memory for him. And again, we don't even know – I know we're talking about Bates' storyline.
We'll get to that in a couple more.
But
we've got
just
25 storylines to cover
tonight. I know, there's so much
tonight.
To cover. So anyway, but I just like that storyline. I thought that was a nice little tie-in between the two is that they both ended up in their pockets and they both kind of were their – undoing in a way.
Incriminating evidence.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, it kind of struck me as odd that Bates would have left that in his pocket.
Mm.
I know that later on he says, why didn't you let me go through him? But why would he even hold on to the thing ever? Anyway. So
maybe we'll find out in series 5.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we'll find out of it.
In 10 months, for God's sake.
All right, but before we get into the Bates storyline and all that and Mary, I wanted to talk, just deal with the American contingent.
Let's
because
talk about the Americans.
That's why they're here, is this whole, being presented, coming out, etc. Or at least that's what they say. Because this was the great opportunity to get Shirley MacLaine playing Martha Livingston.
Right. So can I just talk about sort of what happened? So Mrs. Levinson arrives from America and she's just cranky right from the get-go. Am I right?
As always, my God.
She's got Harold with her.
Well, she came early, nobody's there for
no
her.
No one's there to receive me.
Yeah.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
Because 25 servants isn't enough. Yeah. She needs someone from the family. And I mean, I get it. But anyway, she was cranky from the get-go. And she's with Harold, who is,
Paul Giamatti. This is our chance to see him.
Exactly. Paul Giamatti. We love him. We've been looking forward. We've been hearing about him being on the series for many months and finally getting to see him. And he was fantastic.
Yeah,
he
didn't disappoint
great.
At all. I loved even the first part where he was saying, some people might think it'd be nice to be here. I can't remember the line, but it's basically the last line was some say it might or it ain't or something. He just uses the word ain't.
Ain't.
That's the part I liked about it. It was like, okay, yeah, we get these different worlds coming in, and I just like that part of it because that just buttoned it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So right from the get-go, Mrs. Levinson is pegged as a bag of money.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
From Lord Aysgarth.
Yeah, and even Samson is the one that points it out.
Right. They're the two of them figure it out. Oh, sure, he's positively made of money. She's positively made of money.
That's the whole reason why Downton can keep rain off of its roof or whatever it is, so...
Indeed.
Yeah.
Aysgarth is pursuing her.
Yeah.
Is pursuing Levinson as they go
and
along.
Not very, covertly.
Deftly.
Yeah, it's just horrible.
Well, interesting how he says to her, "Do you know Newport?"
Yeah, yeah. Like he
and we're all sitting here going, "Oh, yeah. For God's sake, yeah. Really?"
I hadn't heard that. Yeah.
What is that? The aristocratic?
Yeah.
Do you come here often?
I don't
line?
Know. Yeah, it's a good one.
Do you know Newport? Mm-hmm. So, but she did you think that she seemed to be onto him right from the get go?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought she knew right away. Certainly, Harold did.
Funny that he didn't see it.
No. Yeah.
Or chose not to see it.
Yeah. Blatant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of awkward too.
Right.
And funny, just the way she's looking at him and, you know, the little kind of facial expression she gives is just like he has no idea who he's dealing with.
Yeah.
So, but Harold does, the way he talked to Madeline about it. And
right.
Said, I'm not going to help my mom out. She doesn't need any help. Well,
and isn't she pretty, that Madeline?
Oh, my she God. Yeah.
So
she's great.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
And, man, all those girls are white and skinny. Just white and skinny. They're all like.
Is that right?
You know, the porcelain skin and bony shoulders.
Absolutely.
Which look good in those fashions. Again, I'm bringing it up.
Okay. No, that's great. I'm glad you did. Yeah. But, he does a horrible job of trying to. But, you know, more than anything, it was great that when Martha Levinson finally says, no, I'm not going to, no. I have no interest in, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I don't need a title.
No, and, not and
the,
interested.
What was the thing she said? She goes, I don't want people I'm hanging out with to think of me as being loud and. I can't remember the
loud
line.
And rude,
loud,
I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And she goes, because I think they are narrow and pompous and, you know, boring.
Right.
So, which is great. But she throws him a bone, says, but no, come to Newport now. She basically
pimps
him
all
out.
The rich widows.
Yeah, she's going to, you know, set up a nice little, speed dating kind of thing
right?
in Newport with
well,
all
I don't
the rich
think
old
it was,
ladies.
I don't think it was really out of the kindness of her heart.
No.
Not that she's an unkind person, but I think she, you know, she was having a little bit of fun with him.
Oh, yeah.
Because she even said to him, he says, why didn't you tell me? Why are you turning me
why
down?
Why did you lead me on?
Why did you lead me on? That was it. And he says, because I thought you'd add to the fun of the trip.
Yeah.
And I was right.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a concession prize, right?
And I think it'll be even more fun with her. Imagine being at those parties in Newport when Lord Asgard is there.
Well, now, and isn't this the series that Julian Fellowes keeps talking about doing in America?
Yeah, so but I think it's the prequel of it. But
right, but essentially it's, I mean, it may not involve these
characters.
It would
be in Newport.
But it's Newport society and it's these, the industrialist wealth women who are looking for titles, you know, and then these old money English titled English men coming in to, you know, just do exactly what Lord Grantham and Cora did.
It's a wonderful merger. That's all it is.
It's
you know,
a
and
thing.
I love that, you know, Martha has decided that, no, I'm going to arrange this. I'll set this up for you. And why shouldn't she? I'm sure she has a lot of friends back in Newport who really would like the title.
Well, and you know, I mean, she's about the fun. She could just sit back and watch
that happen
while she's got a gin and tonic in her hand, just sort of smugly smiling at all the machinations that are going on with her rich widow friends and her, you know, titled aristocratic relatives.
Right. I think she'll have a ball.
Yeah.
Literally have a ball. And enjoy it. So I think that would be a blast.
I really want Julian Fellowes to, you know, kind of get a little Aaron Sorkin in him and you know, do whatever Aaron Sorkin does.
Yeah.
and just write faster because I want to see that show.
We're going to get letters on that one.
I didn't say anything.
No, you didn't. But
I bronchitis. I don't remember if I mentioned that.
Yes, you did. But the other thing, the other thing that I loved about Martha being there is, you know, finally we had some time with Martha and Violet. Because, you know, for the couple of weeks now, we've had Violet and Isabel going at it. Now we get to see these two grand dames.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we only had the one scene.
I know.
Where we had any kind of thing going on there. We're going back and forth when, you know, Violet is, you know, ribbing her about, you know, taking on Orlasgarth. And this is before
she revealed
Martha finally reveals, I turned him down, all that kind of stuff. And then they have that great thing about the looking glass and you know, I'm not afraid to look in the glass because I'm not afraid to see the future. And, you know, my world is coming and yours
my world is coming nearer, and your world is slipping further and further away.
Yeah, which was that one. And then the look on the Dowager after that was just wonderful, you know, because it's true. Mm-hmm. And again, another parallel because Mary says almost the exact same thing to Charles.
Right.
About how, you know, look, you sure we should do this because your world
is coming up.
On the way up and mine's on the way out and stuff. And so it wasn't even just I should say, it wasn't generational anymore. It used to be, you know, Mary.
No,
was,
very true. So, that's what we were dealing with the first exactly. two, first, second, third season.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting that they're trying to make that, you know, that's always been a theme anyway. But to have Mary say it like that so succinctly and have it, you know, parrot, mm-hmm. maybe parallel is a better way of saying yeah. it, what we heard from Martha, I thought it was great. So we kept that theme running. But now we're seeing it in a generation. You were going to say
yeah,
something?
No.
Okay. So – that part of it I love. I wished that Julian had taken a little bit more time to be able to spend some more time with Violet and Martha. That was one thing that I missed in this episode.
Well, yeah, me too.
I mean, felt like yeah, we'll get to Paul Giamatti right now, but I felt like Shirley was a little underused. I totally felt that.
And we had – it was so delightfully catty the right. first time they came together
yeah.
in Series 3. And it mm-hmm. was – I mean, it was one of those things where you kept rewinding and watching it over yeah. again, laughing, looking yeah. at each of the facial expressions. Yeah. And we just didn't get that here.
No, we didn't.
That was it was a lot of Shirley MacLaine sort of, you know, reacting to people and mm-hmm. not being as proactive
right.
as a character as she has been in the past. And I really missed that.
I did. And it was obviously, he had so much story he wanted to include because he did. I mean, he put a lot of story into this. But for me, some of the stories that were in there, I could have done without.
Me
but
too.
I really wanted to hang with them because that made me – well, I just missed it. It
yeah.
just really was – and it was a thing that was palpable for me in the show. I was like, yeah, it's missing that thing.
Yes.
And then you
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I really – I just kept – you know, because we've been anticipating this for
yeah.
weeks and weeks, months really, going, yeah. you know, Shirley MacLaine and Paul yeah. Giamatti, and this is going to be amazing. And it was –
Yeah. And, you know. You know, especially when you get the two grand dames going at it. Yes. All right. So that being said, we got to talk about Harold because
yes.
I thought that storyline was a lot of fun. I thought Madeline was amazing.
Yes.
I don't have the actress's name at the moment, but we'll move on from that. You know, in the beginning, just the way they were, you know – portraying Paul, it was great because he didn't really want to be there, so he's reluctant. He hates the food. He hates everything. He's only coming here because he has to get away from the teapot thing. So, but then he's kind of beguiled, and
yes.
you know, and with good reason. And of course, in the beginning, he thinks it's all about you don't want to be with me, and only your dad
right from
wants
the very
to be
start.
Me.
He's been the guy that yeah. the ladies are set up with.
Right.
Everyone's trying to
every father,
catch him.
Yeah, every father wants me to dance with his daughter, all that
yeah.
kind of stuff because of the money.
I'm well
things.
Familiar with this.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, he later on at the picnic, he's talking about how he's the playboy and he'd much rather just go
good time girls.
You know, give them a nice
diamond
little
bracelets.
Thank you and then move on.
Right.
And for whatever reason.
Where were those guys when
yeah.
I was dating?
For whatever reason, Madeline sees something in them.
Right. Well, it's so interesting because from the get-go, he offends her.
Yeah.
Because he talks about money. He yeah. talks about position. He talks kind of rudely about her father.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she, this poor little ingenue, you know, yeah. she's kind of like, what?
Yeah.
And he offends her, which was the motivation for the picnic.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to
yeah,
apologize.
Apologize and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but we see – and, you know, she says that you're far more clever and you're modest. And I say, what? Modest? What? But she obviously sees something in him.
Right.
And it starts to take effect.
Right.
You can see him actually seeing that maybe I'm not as bad as I think I am. Is that what you got?
Well, yes, but – it was sort of complicated because mm-hmm. they go on the picnic and he tries to make a truce with her, but is kind of clumsy at it.
You know,
he's
horrible.
A bit of an oaf again and, yeah. and succeeds in sort of offending her again.
Yeah.
And
he doesn't
he
have
says,
any gentility.
No, he doesn't. And I think he sort of prides himself on that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, true. he's the outsider inside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I think mm-hmm. that's his shtick, so to speak. But he says to her, I like you very much more than any lady I've ever known.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's sort of the first real moment we
right.
get with him because he's always playing the, you yeah. know, playing the numbers mm-hmm. and doing the deal that he always does because that's how it always goes.
Right.
And so I think he is taken aback by
oh, yeah.
how he feels
he's a
about
little
her.
Off kilter. Mm-hmm. He's not expecting to have this connection
right.
or have her take any kind of interest. Even when the first time when who was it says, please take. Oh, I think it was Cora that said, would you please take Madeline
yeah.
in?
Uh-huh.
He's you probably don't want to go. You know,
right.
He's all that. And she is guileless. Later on in the show, she's actually said she's without guile.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, she's found him out and that kind of thing. So, but I thought she played it wonderfully under.
Yes.
But very strong.
Yes.
And, you know, which was kind of a little bit, I think that's what put him off center, because she was able to be forthright.
Absolutely.
Without being offensive.
Because he's used to being played.
Exactly. And so anyway, I thought it was wonderfully written, wonderfully performed.
Yeah.
And that part of it was a highlight for me, that particular story.
Me too. And, you know, Paul Giamatti is great with pathos. He's a guy who, you know, he's not leading man looking.
Look at him. Yeah. He looks like a schlub.
But boy, he brings you in. He's so endearing and has his own way of being, you know, oafish and then charming in the next minute. Yeah. And I think he's fantastic with that. So, excuse me, they have a couple of really sweet conversations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of starts to have this conversation of maybe we can, you know, sort of be together. And she's like, but then the conversation that they had at the ball was really interesting. And that's the one you're talking about where she says, you know, you're kind, you're far too modest.
Smart.
And any woman would be happy to be with you.
Yeah.
You know, but essentially she's going, but it's not going to be me because I've seen through the game that my dad's putting me in.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. But don't you think that they're, you know, because he even says, well, you're right. I mean, that was a nice little moment there.
Well, that's
says,
what
well,
I was
you're,
getting
you're
to.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so they're setting up that there may be a possibility for them and a real one, though.
But that's the thing. So she says no thank you to the setup that her father has put her on and the setup that Paul Giamatti is expecting. The diamond bracelet.
Yeah.
Transaction.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, she has real moments with him and cuts through all of that fluff to here's what I know about you and here's what I can see about you. And you can aw shucks me and discount what I'm saying all you want. But the truth of the matter is you're a good guy and you are a catch.
Right.
And so
and she has genuine affection for him.
Yeah. And so the moment when he says to her, will you write? Mm-hmm. You just kind of melt a little bit and go, now here's something that could really happen.
That would be very interesting. Very well, very, very well done.
Yeah.
So, all right. So now, last on our American contingency, we have to talk about Ethan. So it's, you know, Harold's valet, who makes a horrible impression, I guess, on Carson.
God.
With his, you know, offering his opinion of the appetizers.
Of the canapes.
Just stepping in it all over
the place. Would you like one of these? I think they're quite good.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Levinson is my employer, not me. Well, all
in
that kind
house,
of stuff.
In this house, you both are.
Yeah, so clearly we get to see the two worlds colliding. But more than anything, I like that he took an interest in Daisy.
Daisy.
And the whole thing about, you know, Mrs. Patmore saying, you know, well, Carson says, I don't think that his...
Oh, no, I've got it written down here.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. I have it written down.
All right. So, of course, Ethan is asking Carson, you know, if she's at all interested or if there's anything going on between
her and Jimmy.
Yeah. And that whole scene was horrible.
And so Carson says to Mrs. Patmore, I suspect his interest in her is not entirely proper.
Right.
Which Miss Patmore replies, Mr. Carson, all women need someone to show interest every now and then. Preferably in a manner that's not entirely proper.
Yeah, you go. and of course, you know, and again, as the audience, we're knowing how much Daisy liked Alfred and that whole thing and how that horrible thing turned out. And, you know, so it's great for us because Daisy has somebody taking an interest in her and finally Daisy kind of responds.
But you skipped over the one thing that I wanted to talk about this early on with Daisy is when they meet.
Oh, yeah.
He says to her, because I think this kind of sets the tone for the entire thing, and it's another one of those full circle moments where he says to her, you know, here we are in London. Are you excited? And Daisy's response, I'm never excited.
I'm never excited. Yeah. And even she says something to Thomas, too, because she says, are you excited to go? And she goes, what's the difference if I'm peeling potatoes
in London?
Or New York? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that part of it was great because by the end of the show, we see her very excited. And it also it kind of reverberates with what Edith was saying about, you know, all the Italians getting all excited about stuff. And we should just be out there with our emotions and stuff like that. And, you know, that's not very English.
Yes.
Lord Gillingham, I'm not sure who said it. So that theme was running around in this too. So we get to see that as well. Because Mary's even one that said, I don't know if we start to let them out, I don't know if we're going to ever stop them.
Right.
So that theme was running through. And I like that they did it with Daisy because for so long she's been forlorn about this whole Alfred thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, by the end of it, when they're at the beach and Ethan says, so how about it? We're going to go. And she says, no. And of course, that's when Ivy steps in and says, I'll do it. And so this was the one character we weren't going to kill off, but we're going to get rid of.
Right.
So
right.
It's going to be
Ivy.
But
in a nice way.
Exactly. So she's going to see
Wonder
America.
If Ivy's off doing movies with Dan Stevens.
Right. There you go. But it was great to see Daisy be all excited and, you know, with Mrs. Patmore.
Because she's stinking cute, that girl.
Yes, she is. And how, you know, she was so, she said, just to have some a young gentleman be interested in me.
And
to
me.
Court me. Yeah. Me. And it's going to take me until next summer or whatever.
Yeah.
She's, it was great, you know, because.
And then the kindness that she paid Ivy by endorsing her, essentially.
For
because
all
the two
this
of them
time.
have had not an easy alliance.
Yeah, but do you think it was a kindness or she just wanted to get rid of her?
No.
It was a kindness.
She was
I'm kidding.
Kind.
Yeah. It was great. And that was, it was even nice that Mrs. Patmore acknowledged
yes.
it. So, yeah, we got, and that for me is like, I love when they have those little moments, you know,
yeah.
just little moments.
Yeah.
And that's what carried it through. So, okay, so that wraps up the American contingent. Now we can get to everybody else.
Mary and her men.
Mary and her merry men.
Yes.
So don't call them my Mary's men.
Don't call them my men.
So this, of course, is Lord Gillingham and Charles Blake are there, and they're still, you know, vying for her attention.
And Napier gets mentioned,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah, a few times, yeah, but he's not part of the show.
He's out of the country or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, and this was great because we did get to learn a lot about Charles Blake.
We did.
So...
You know, starting kind of from the top of the Mary story, mm-hmm. When they arrive in London, Mary, you know, we are reminded of the
animosity
between sisters.
Yes.
I would rather sleep on the roof than share a room with Edith.
Poor Edith. Oh, my God. Yeah. So.
What? That's it.
And then, of course, later on, as we mentioned, I'll lie. No problem.
Yeah. So,
but I liked that they're just little cat and mouse. And even was it Frieda Ward Dudley Ward was the one that said, all right, play nicely, gentlemen, wasn't it?
Yes, in something. The museum.
Play nicely, children, I think is what she said. So
yes.
Obviously,
yeah, so
two.
She could see.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So we got the love triangle going
mm-hmm.
on. But, you know, she was having that conversation with Lord Gillingham about whether, you know, it was very touching. She was saying, look, a year ago, I thought I was going to be mourning the loss of Matthew for
forever.
The rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 1 year later, at least I know there's a possibility for me. And isn't that
and
something
shouldn't,
to celebrate?
Exactly. And isn't then, that something to celebrate?
Yeah. So I thought that was very touching. And he was genuine and said, yeah, I mean, the way he was with her, you could see that he did feel really good for her. That's a possibility. And then even taking it a step further, when he actually told her about...
You keep jumping ahead because I have notes here I keep trying to get back
then
to.
Then go.
The moment Blake helps with the caper.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right? We didn't talk about the fact that he was there, you know, with a sock drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a conversation, Mary and Blake, where he says, you were in trouble and you came to me.
Oh, yeah.
And so, give me a chance.
Right.
Let me back in the game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she considers it and, you know. But she's still.
I think isn't that what she says? Well, your ways, your
yes.
Okay, she
yes.
says your world's on the way in.
Exactly, and
okay.
then she has the conversation with Gillingham, where Gillingham tells Mary that Blake is not an outsider.
No, he's gonna.
Not only is he not an outsider, he's set to inherit his cousin's money, the baronetcy. If I say that right, I'm sorry. I don't. If I didn't,
and
the largest estate in Ulster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And
become
said,
more eligible than Lord Gillingham.
Than I am myself.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, very sweet of him to tell her that. And an interesting plot twist.
So do you think it was just because he's just a good guy or he just wants her? Because he values her so much. And we just had this whole thing about, you know, isn't that a good thing to celebrate? Or is that, I think it was afterwards that he said that. Or was it before?
He did the celebration before he told
her.
Okay,
so I mean, it's just because, what do you think?
Well, I think it's, I don't think he wants to win her on false pretenses, which is kind of the same reason that Blake gave at the
end. That's
exactly
what he says, yeah.
So he says, you know, I wanted to win you on my own merits.
Right. Yeah, that's what I think it is too.
And so I think that, you know, because they are called gentlemen for a reason. I think they are actual gentlemanly gentlemen, unlike some of the people
unlike
on
Samson.
Unlike some of the people on the show. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So I, you know, I wanted to win you, you know, as myself, and then the final parting words, let battle commence.
Yeah,
let battle commence.
Oh, okay, next season.
All right,
setting up for next season.
Hashtag let battle commence.
There you go.
That is what it's going to be for next season.
Yeah, it's going to be. And I don't know if Evelyn's even going to be part of it.
I don't know.
Is it really making it look this triangle?
Just speaking of Mary and her men, I want to talk about one of the comments that we got on our YouTube channel.
Okay,
you people crack me up. You really do. They're so much fun to read.
Oh, heck, man. One of the best things about doing the podcast is
reading
the comments that people have shared with us. That's great.
We love them. We love them. And so Mary Joy Vicente wrote the comment of the week, and that was, Mary and her Death V is going to be the name of my future band. Thanks, AfterBuzz. Holla! So Mary and her Death V, we just don't say that word here on AfterBuzz. To which I responded, the song titles that come to mind.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's something we want to be.
We will see, as we look forward to Series 5, what is going to happen with Mary and her Merry Men and Mary and the Death V.
Well, what I loved about the storyline was that they gave us backstory in a great way because it showed character in doing that because we learned all about Charles Blake through Gillingham.
Okay, yeah.
And it showed Gillingham's character.
Yep.
Rather than just somebody telling us information. It was
great. It absolutely did.
It was a wonderful way to do it. And then, you know, it just really deepened and richened the whole love triangle thing and the suitors and the wooing and all that other stuff.
Well, and the quadrangle is what they're calling it now, you know.
Oh, because Evelyn's still part of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but in this particular episode, he was barely there, so I'm calling it a triangle. So anyway, but I really appreciated that part of it. That part of it was great.
Yeah.
So and it also sets up next season.
Right. It's so interesting reading the comments online about these gentlemen suitors and what people think of them. You know, because most of these actors, like a lot of the British actors, show up on lots of different shows and lots of different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are people who are definitely in the Gillingham camp and definitely in the Napier camp
and definitely in the Blake camp.
And it's really interesting, you know, how people get so passionate about their opinions.
The betting might be pretty intense. Who's going to
Let battle commence.
But if they know the history and the Death V, moving on. So, actually, I wanted to move on because to the other part of Mary's storyline, which is that Mrs. Hughes, of course, approaches her after she had talked to Anna and asking for coats.
Looking for
refugees.
Exactly. The clothing donations for Russian refugees and asks Anna if she has any contributions. Yeah. So Anna offers Bates's coat. Mm-hmm. There's a ticket in the pocket.
Stub.
You know, one of the things that a lot of people are not talking about online is the fact that Baxter observes Mrs. Hughes find the ticket. And there's no resolution to that.
Yeah, but she doesn't really see what she has.
She doesn't.
She's just there.
But, you know, it's TV. You never know when they're going to go, she had the perfect shot to be able to see over her shoulder.
That, you know, I know that she's there in the background. I thought that was a little odd, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was just to add
tension
because she didn't see it. There's no way she could have saw it. And the ticket's now burned. So it's a false kind of thing going on there.
Right. You know, as the story rolled out, Mrs. Hughes presents it to Mary. Right?
Yeah.
And Mary's very conflicted about it. She wants to come clean.
Yeah, she thinks it's wrong no matter what he did.
It's wrong. That's what she says over and over again. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Hughes says, if he was there to avenge his wife's honor, I won't condemn him for it.
Right.
You know, so it's that gray area of what do you do?
Yeah.
Mrs. Hughes checks on Bates. And says, you know, I bet
that's it. They both have – Mrs. Hughes and Mary do their little trying to spy, espionage, interrogation kind of thing.
Yes.
Coy asking.
Yeah. Mrs. Hughes says, when was the last time you were in London?
Yeah,
I haven't been here since my mother died. Has it been that long?
Oh, my God.
And then Mary, I bet people regret things all the time that they do in London. Like perhaps tripping other people in front of
like
buses?
He's just going to, gosh, you know.
Oh, as a matter of fact.
You're so right. Let me tell you what I did, you know.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it was nice that they tried.
Right. So the conversation between Anna and Mary at the end, once Mary has discovered how much Bates helped.
Yeah.
And she's discussing that with Anna, right?
And the
saying,
loyalty.
Yeah. And saying, you know, Bates has saved us.
Yeah.
And Anna says, well, he is very loyal to the family. And Mary says,
and we are loyal to him.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I am burning this
ticket. That's right. She burns it.
And you will never know about it, Anna.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Anna doesn't need to know.
No.
And the fewer people that know, the better.
Right.
So, you know, it's that part of it was satisfying to some degree. I still am just driven crazy by the fact that we, you know, the event took place off camera. We didn't get
okay,
to see
it. Okay, I want to talk about that. All right. So, I mean, I know. We're going to go long. We're just going to go long. That's how it is.
Okay.
because I need to talk about
okay,
this. It's
go
been
ahead.
Over a week, and then
okay.
I watched it again last night, and I got all flabbergasted about it. Mm-hmm. I'm still pissed that there wasn't an unfortunate hunting accident. Mm-hmm. Hashtag unfortunate hunting accident. And I'm still annoyed that it happened off camera. Now, I know that's how they do a lot of things on Downton Abbey. We didn't actually witness Anna and her attack.
Well, that's a different reason. That's a different thing.
Of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it is. And I'm not asking for them to get grisly and, you know, mm-hmm. to see someone be killed by a bus. But for it all to be speculation mm-hmm. is a little like Bates being imprisoned for half a season.
Yeah, it's not very satisfying.
It's not. And mm-hmm. It's irritating is what it is.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say that because I just felt like they were just stringing it along. And mm-hmm. and I have so trusted Julian Fellowes for so many seasons that he always gives us some kind of satisfaction, especially for something like this. There was a huge uproar this season, and there
right.
will be again in the U.S. in a couple of weeks when it mm-hmm. comes out here. People are going to go crazy.
Right, because he decided to have Anna be attacked.
Exactly. And I said – when it happened,
right.
we are going to have an awesome comeuppance, and it was one of my predictions. I gave
right.
it several times. It's going to be so satisfying. It's going to be amazing because that's what Julian Fellowes did, and I feel like he let us down. I
right.
really do.
The only thing I can say about that is it would be interesting to see if in the next series that if he – I don't know, some does it flashback or whatever, but by that time, I don't think it'll be
very
satisfying.
And we're not going to care as much it's a year from
right.
now.
Well, and even when Mrs. Hughes is kind of posing that thing, that question, which is, does it matter how
right.
it happened? We don't know. We're
right.
Everything's speculation. So is that Julian Fellowes saying, look, it doesn't matter. He's out of the picture. It occurred. He's
it's
gone.
Over.
It's over. Does it matter how it happened or who did it or any of that?
Yes.
It does. Okay.
It
In
does
your opinion,
for
me. It does.
Because it was such a shocking event
right.
and it was such a painful event. You know, to so many people and in so many ways, I feel like there needs to be an equal or close to equal resolution for us. And there wasn't. It was just like, oh, and by the way, he's gone.
So, and it's not enough that he won't be found out in any way, if indeed it was Bates.
No. It's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough. Do you have any sense of this? Or
I'm just
you,
playing devil's advocate.
I know you
I'm trying
are.
To create
but that's, I know you are, but I've tried to get anything from
yeah.
you.
No, I've always said, I said with you as well, that he better, because
yeah.
the only way I think that there would be some sort of, this isn't the right word, symmetry, but if you're going to go down that road and you're going to, the audience is going to invest that much in it, you want that paid off somehow.
The only thing, in addition to what you're saying about mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, the only other reasoning I can come up with is I don't want to do it in a Christmas special because,
no. yeah.
you know, because we want the sumptuous,
well,
enjoyable
yeah. but,
moment.
But we talked about that he should have wrapped it up before the Christmas
He should
schedule.
Have, and I
yeah.
expected it last
yeah.
episode.
We wanted it, but
and
we didn't get it. No.
We didn't get it.
Because now it just feels, more than anything to me, I'm agreeing, again, you've already mentioned this, but it feels like it's just stringing that story.
They're dragging it out.
With no purpose. It doesn't really serve except to be an annoyance.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
And that,
I feel very strongly about this, in case
clearly,
you can't tell.
Clearly. I'm sure other people have other opinions. I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
I really have got some
people on my team.
Yeah, I know most people are kind of in your camp anyway, so. That they're not.
Not that I'm such a vengeful person.
No, it's not that at all. It's just.
But like,
seems
I think symmetry
be...
is actually a good word
okay, well,
for you to you know to bring up because that's what it is. You know, for how painful and how long we endured this, you know, terrible, terrible violation
injustice.
Of our this injustice of one of our beloved mm-hmm. characters. We don't have any kind of satisfaction in the resolution, and I know that's what life is like. But you know what, Downton Abbey isn't real life. This is what we say when we're talking in screenwriting.
It's a little
and drama.
Wish fulfillment. So.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
I'm
that
done.
Out of your chest?
I'm done. Thank you. I'm done.
Okay.
I will
right.
put my soapbox back where it belongs.
All right. Thank you. All right. We'll move on then. So, we dealt with the whole Bates ticket stub and all that kind of stuff. All right. Now we have to get to poor Edith.
Poor Edith.
This is another storyline. I mean, you know, and I did feel really bad for her. I mean, the whole storyline is kind of, you know, it's just. What else does this woman have to endure? But
Good Lord,
so I'm
going to
say what I didn't like about it, but then so that we can concentrate on things we did like. I just felt like there were too many scenes with Rosamund that were the same.
Repeats.
It's just repeat, just saying the same thing in a different way. And I'm going, let's move the story along a line. Line along. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here it is. I know she's repressed. She's British. So of course she's repressed. But, you know, she feels like she's just so in this horrible place. And she is because Gregson's not there. And they had nice little information about Gregson being beat up by the brown shirts
so by Nazis.
They got some of that information. Yep. That was interesting. But, you know, what she's going to do, so the whole thing is what she's going to do, what she's not going to do, and it's just...
Right, because it's supposed to be all set and done at this point.
But to have every scene be about having the same thing, you can't, you have to stay silent, but I can't, she deserves this, and the inheritance, and all this
repeat,
stuff.
Repeat.
Exactly, and, mm-hmm. and that for me was just, I'm going to move that, just please move that to a different... level or something.
Yeah.
Just take it somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was satisfying at the end. What I did like about it is when Tom came and showed up and said that whole thing about, well, because, you know, she starts the episode with saying the whole thing, which we mentioned, which is it's better if we let these things out. And she's envious of the Italians and their, you know, their
the Latin,
emotions.
Latin,
that what she says? Okay, beg your pardon.
You're mostly right.
So because obviously there's something burning inside her that she wants to let, and she can't because, and she says that whole thing to her father saying, you know, I would never hurt you. So this stuff is all brewing underneath, which is great. And that slow burn is good. But I just wanted the conversations between she and Rosamund to move to deepen or to have something else, some more.
Or spend the time on someone else like Mrs. Levinson.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
that was the other point I was going to make. So.
Sorry.
But no, that's fine. I'm glad you made it. Because the end was satisfying when Tom says to her, look, you know, we have to stand our ground. We got to find our place.
We must fight our corner.
Find our corner, or they're going to roll over us and all that. And that's the thing. For whatever reason, that's the tipping point. She finally decides, I'm going home.
Yep.
I'm leaving tomorrow. And, you know, Rosamund says, are you sure somebody else can't go to the continent for you? I said, no, it has to be me, you know, that kind of stuff. And then we finally see her with Mr. Truett. And we know what the next season, the next series, is going to be all about. She's going to have her daughter stay with
them nearby,
and she's not. And the secret is. And I thought it was great when they said, "No, the secret." When he says the secret should be between us, and
right,
you know,
again, that fewer people who know, the less likely it's going
to
get out.
And that also speaks. That to me was just like Gillingham telling about Charles Blake. This is him showing again. It's this great character that there are men of character and principle and all that stuff. It doesn't matter what class. It doesn't matter, but they're there.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice little comparison.
One of the elements to this story that I think is going to be a serious complication and just difficult is what Rosamund brings up, and that is Mr. and Mrs. Schroeder of Geneva who have the baby.
Yeah.
So they've had this baby now for 8 months, 9 months.
Yeah. Something like
maybe
that.
Less than that.
No,
it's because she was there pregnant.
Months,
okay, so let's say they've had the baby for 5 months.
Yeah.
And then she's going to come along and take that baby away.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I know this is picky, but I imagine it would be less than 5 months because she had to leave before she was 3 months pregnant. Otherwise, she probably would have started showing, right?
Okay.
So let's just say that she probably left at 3 months. She would have had the baby 6 months later or whatever. So they've had the child maybe 2 months.
Okay.
2 or 3 months. Let's just say it's that.
Okay,
but it's just a difference between that and 4 or 5 months.
I mean, right.
Obviously. But it's going to be tragic no matter what.
It is.
And I don't know how to think
maybe
of that.
Maybe that's some of the drama that we were going to see in series.
I hope so. That's exactly what I was about to say because that would be good stuff.
Right.
Because, you know, not that we're going to – I mean, I don't know how they're going to play it out or Julian what he's going to do with it, but that's great drama.
Mm-hmm.
Because here this – are you kidding me? We did everything right and we have this child now you want to take it away, you crazy?
Yeah.
And Edith rightly says to Rosamund, there's nothing in writing. There's nothing – it's not a formal agreement. But, I mean, it's just tragic.
Well, and, you know, that's a scenario where everybody loses.
It's terrible. I mean,
because the Schroeders will lose. Yeah. Edith will lose because she won't actually get to have her baby with
her.
Yeah. She's going to be with Mr. Truett's family. Mr. Truett, there's going to be conflict there. Everybody's going to lose in this game.
I mean, possibly. But, I also think there's that there is that glimmer of possibility for Edith.
To have some happiness.
She'll have some happiness because her daughter will be close. She won't have Gregson, but at least she'll have this. I mean, there's that.
Yeah, I guess.
And, you know, I think the Truetts will be okay.
Yeah.
That'll be all right. I feel horrible for the Schroeders, though. I mean, my God, I can't even imagine that part of it, having the baby ripped right out from
home.
So that's going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. But that also sets, again, setting the stage for next
series.
Next series, yeah.
Exactly, and having, mm-hmm. having
and
yeah.
That'll be fun to deal with. Good drama. All right. All right. So anyway, that's our Edith, you know, poor Edith.
Poor Edith. And we end the story with her being still.
All right. But now let's go back to what you had said, which is, you know, they could have spent, you know, rather than doing the same scene with Rosamund a couple of times, they could have spent it with Martha or whomever mm-hmm. and had more fun there. That's how exactly how I felt about the Tom, Thomas, Sarah.
Oh, amen.
I was like, why are we, you know, first of all, I like Thomas in that – I love his character and that he's mean. And sometimes he's just mean for no reason, just
right.
mean and nasty.
Right.
And that part of it, you know, it's okay. But every once in a while it just drives me crazy because why are you busting – why are you busting Tom's chops? I know that, yeah, you hate waiting on him, all that kind of stuff. But this particular storyline bugged me like crazy. It bored me too. I was bored by the Sarah part of it and them and this seeing –
Well, and I think there's something that the fans have been talking about. I got a tweet yesterday from Zula Mayan about that fans don't like the Sarah Bunting character.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, I've got two pages of comments that people make on the
really?
Character. Yeah. This is all from IMDb.
Wow. From IMDb?
There are comment message boards.
I know,
on
but
IMDb.
I just, you don't usually find them there. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway,
yeah.
go ahead.
There's got to be a better woman for Tom. I'm not a fan. She's too nosy. And this one is terrible, but it's so funny I have to say it. What is up with this woman? Why is she on the show? If I ever have to see that uncouth clown mouth again, it will be too soon. I mean, that's terrible.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, they say, Julian Fellowes, if he has any respect for his viewers, he better not have them end up together. Otherwise, heads will roll his. But, you know, there's a general dislike of this character. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that someone talked about was she can prey on Tom and that will someone will be all right. But as opposed to when Edna preyed on Tom and everybody, you know, mm-hmm. came around and was up in arms about that.
About Edna doing it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway...
Well, here's the thing I like about the character. It does put his conflict front and center.
Sure. His alliances.
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. and the whole thing with Violet saying, look, these are your people. This is your family now. And he goes, well, this is my family, but they're not my people.
Right.
I mean, it puts that front and center. And I do like that part of it.
That's an interesting conflict.
It is. And I like when she says things are difficult. And he says, no, losing Sybil was difficult. Everything after that is really easy.
For God's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I like that part of it.
Yeah.
I just the parts that I don't like is that she's constantly berating him for, you know,
not being a real person.
Yeah, exactly.
An unchanged
person. And I'm going, well, you barely know this guy. You haven't even given him a half a chance to be who he is. Mm-hmm. You're always expecting him to be something else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shut up for a second and, you know, actually be with him rather than, you know, expect him to be or want him to be something that he isn't.
Right.
And that part of it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
But that just may be the character. But I do like that it forces Tom to deal with his central conflict.
Yep.
That part of it I like.
Yep.
But I didn't like the storyline just because it didn't do anything.
Yep.
The whole Tom and Thomas thing is like, oh, so he's just being mean. And is it just reminding us that he's a mean son of a bitch?
Yeah, probably.
And like we needed to know that? I mean, it just didn't go anywhere. It just felt like it died and was of no use to me. I mean, I would have much rather spent other time with Martha or, you know, I don't know, anything else.
Lots of other characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so for me, it just didn't.
But maybe
was
it was just, you know, a reminder, trying to remember who everybody is
but
as we go over
the part
hiatus.
Of the Thomas thing I did like was that when he was pressing Baxter. But again, even that was double-edged because I hated the fact that we didn't get any more information. Again, we're just.
I know.
How long do you keep pushing this storyline and not giving us any information?
Yeah, that's...
So we still don't know what he's got on Baxter.
Yep.
We just know it's horrible.
Yep.
That, you know, and, you know, I'm just wondering, is that because he hasn't decided what it is yet, meaning Julian Fellowes?
I know.
But we know we have to have something. But the part of it I liked, of course, is that Mosley gets in there and, you know, and you know, says, look, you know, I love the way he said it. You know, sometimes it's better to take a risk than go down the wrong path.
Mm.
Which is a great, great thing. And then, of course, at the end, when they're at the beach and, you know, Thomas is trying to, you know, hold Baxter down again, mm-hmm. she basically finds her strength and says, you know, screw you.
You
do what you do. You do what you have to do and I'll do what I have to do. And then she tells Mosley, I found strength. I found courage in your strength or something.
Yeah. Like. My what?
Yeah. One of the best lines of the whole show right there.
It was.
Because who else? Of course, Mosley's so guileless and isn't even aware that he has any strength.
My what?
My what? Yeah. But for that part of it, I appreciated that storyline. I hate the fact that we didn't learn anything. Because it's like, come on, tell us something. You're going to make us wait. I mean, because the first episode, we got to learn that he held something on episode.
Absolutely.
On Baxter.
Right.
The first episode of this
right.
series.
And by the end of the episode.
We know nothing.
I mean, end of the series, we don't know.
Yeah. And I go, you kidding me? Nine episodes in, we can't know anything?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't. Maybe he's running out of ideas. I don't know.
I just think that, you know, no, I think, well, to me, this was all about he had too much story to tell in this amount of time.
Yeah.
And rather than, you know, get into it a little bit, he just decided, let's move it to the next one. That's what I think it was.
Yeah.
But I think he could have done it a better way without pimping the story and then never delivering.
Right. So. I agree.
Anyway. And the same thing is held with Isabella Merton.
Right.
It's the same story again.
Let's talk about that. Is he maybe a new love interest for Isabella?
Well, that's where they were painting it when they first introduced him a couple of episodes ago.
Right. And... you know, she feels smug and superior about balls and festivities and all that kind of stuff. And then she kind of revisits
her mind.
I don't know. And then they dance.
Right.
That's the entire storyline. I'm having simple soup. I shouldn't be so superior about balls. Let's dance.
But, you know, and then we get a little bit from him saying, look, do they know what they have in you? And she says, that I know what I have in them. So there's that nice little moment. And then we have that nice little moment with Violet and Isabel when he shows up at the ball and she says, oh, my God, it's Lord Merton. And she says... about to take you down the primrose pants of the primrose path of a dalliance.
Of a dalliance.
Oh, and the, yeah, exactly. So for that, it's great. But again, it's like, it was almost like she was shoehorned or crowbarred into the episode.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's just because he has just so much story to tell and so many
characters. Well, the other thing that I think is weird is that the doctor wasn't there at all.
Yeah. Well,
and he's been
supplanted by Lord Merton.
Right. But, I mean, not there at all. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was weird.
It was weird.
Can we talk about Isabel and Violet and their moment in the car?
Sure, yeah.
On their way into London. Mm-hmm. So just a couple of the great lines, because we love talking about the great lines. The Dowager to Isabel, can't you ever offer help without sounding like a trumpeter on the peak of the moral high ground? To which Isabel answers, and must you always sound like the sister of Marie Antoinette?
But she also said, what was the next line she said about that? She said the Duchess or the Marquis or whatever it was.
Oh, right. You remind me of, you talk about, I didn't write it down.
Uh-huh. I did. I'm going to have had trouble finding it. You talk for a second while I look for
okay.
it.
Must you always be, but the thing was that they have been getting along so well for so long.
Yeah, because she helped
because
her
they were
she
dealing,
was sick.
Sick and grieving, you know? And so, thank you, Marissa. So, you know, we had the opportunities for them to kind of have an alliance, an uneasy alliance, and now they're back to their, you know, sort of strained association that they're just dealing with just barely.
Okay, so here it is. So after Isabel said, must you always sound like the sister of Marie Antoinette? And then Violet says, the Queen of Naples was a, what is it? Stalwart figure. The Queen of Naples was a stalwart figure, so that's who Marie Antoinette's sister was. And
I'll
she's
take
saying,
it.
Yeah, it, and she says, I'll take that
as
a compliment.
And
of course, Isabel says, you take everything as a compliment. Now, here's what I wanted so badly. I just thought it would have been a great, great callback. She says, the Queen of Naples was a stalwart figure. I'll take it as a compliment. And I wanted so much Isabel to say, oh. I must have said it wrong because,
uh-huh,
you know,
that's what we've heard.
Oh, my God, that would have been amazing. Wouldn't that have been a great line to call back?
Yeah.
But we didn't get it. Anyway,
so we had that moment.
We did have that moment. And that was fun for them. So but a lot for me, a lot of those are missed opportunities to either move story ahead or spend some because, you know, you bring in Shirley MacLaine, you bring in Paul Giamatti, and you do a lot with Paul, which is great. You don't do so much with Shirley, but, you know, you brought her in for a reason. You might as well use her.
Yeah. I feel badly for all of them.
Yeah.
Can we just talk quickly about Carson and Hughes?
We have to, yes, because this is the one we wanted to end on because we thought this was a great, great little storyline.
So Carson is tasked with finding an outing for the staff.
Cora
who's been working
him.
So hard.
Oh, yes. And
doing double duty.
Yes.
And he decides, let's go to the Crystal Palace or the Science Museum.
And, yeah.
Mrs. Hughes looks like she's sucking on a lemon when she hears that. You know, she's just... Perhaps.
Yes.
And then eventually he pitches his ideas to the staff and gets crickets.
Yeah, crickets. And then he goes, oh, what about Madame Tussauds?
Oh, Madame Tussauds, not just historical.
And I'm going, wait a minute. Were you in the theater for crying out loud? This is the best you can come up with?
So Mrs. Hughes takes it into her own hands to plant a hint that he can't miss.
I felt like I was in the movie Inception in a sense. Like she was planting the inception of the idea.
Oh, funny, yeah.
So just she by putting that postcard.
The postcard of Brighton Beach on the, or Brighton, the beach on Brighton.
Absolutely.
On the bulletin board. And he says at the end, you know, finally. I know it's a defeat.
Yeah, I know it's a
defeat. But why don't we do something simple and go to the beach?
And she goes, well, I'm glad you got there in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, she's great. She's great. I love her. I think she's the best character. Well,
So many.
There are, but I just enjoy those little moments with her and Carson.
But speaking of moments with Carson.
None better than that at the end there when they're he's putting his feet in the water and they're holding my hand, all that stuff.
So she offers her hand to him and says, you can always hold my hand if it makes you feel steady.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talk about getting on in years and how some people might interpret that as being racy.
And
she just takes everything he says in stride. Yeah. And, you know, but she is great at her job.
Oh, my God.
Other thing, you know?
Yeah.
And just, you know, just great, sweet people. But what a beautiful shot.
Oh, the ending shot
I mean, on the beach.
Wonderful lens that made that depth of field just really expand. I mean, that was great. Lots of fun.
You know, overall, I have to say, the first time I watched the episode, I was kind of disappointed.
Really?
I felt that overall the episode was kind of lackluster just because, now, we've already said it was absolutely not lackluster when it comes to the visuals, when it comes to the costumes, when it comes to, you know, what all we're seeing, you know, the locations, all of that kind of stuff, the jewelry. But story-wise, I was just so unsatisfied with so many of the stories.
And I think it's because, you know, and I'm not saying you need to have, you know, one of your major characters die or anything like that. But when I've been talking to people, and very few because I wanted to hold it all so we could get in here and talk.
Yeah.
More than anything, I've been thinking, like, what am I going to be talking about for the rest of the season until it comes on again? Whereas before, past seasons, when we would wrap this up,
we'd
be, oh, my God, what's going to happen? And how are they going to play this out? There isn't as much of that from this particular episode as in past years.
Totally.
And I don't think it has to do with the fact that no one was killed off. It's just that in a few instances, there were some missed opportunities to move things ahead or create some more mystery or wonder so we could go, oh, my God, how are they going to keep that going?
Right. Well, that's the definition of the cliffhanger for the final episode of a show. I mean, this really almost more felt like a what we call in America a series finale. So the series is over and done with. We're not ever coming back, and this is the finale.
There was some,
which is not the case because they are doing a series five. But you know, there isn't that sense of, like you say, you know, I cannot wait until next season because you know, sort of like, oh great, we're finally going to find out what happened to Green, and we're going to finally find out what's going on with Baxter.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, until then, I'm going to watch me some Sherlock.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch me some Midwives, and those are going to be awesome.
So
your overall impression similar?
I mean, again, when I watched it the second time, I was much more happy with it because I guess because I was concentrating on the visuals and the whole grandeur of it all, and rather than the story.
Yeah.
And the story, you know, some of it I loved. I have to say, I loved the Harold and Madeline storyline. I thought that was great. I liked the caper a lot, the whole letter and all the machinations that they had to go through.
It was a little Pamuk-like.
Yes, very much so.
Which was very exciting to watch.
That for me was
happened.
Terrific.
Yeah.
For the reasons we've already discussed, there was a couple things like, I wish they, and there was nothing where I could sink, but I think because the whole, well, some of it was just too resolved, meaning, you know, not that I would suggest it, but as if, let's say, that they didn't resolve the whole letter issue and that maybe there was going to be the scandal, then we would be talking about, oh, my God, because of what they did,
the monarchy is going to be in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. And then we could be talking about that, but, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting you should have done that, but because that kind of thing is missing, you know, it's like that.
Yeah.
So
lackluster
like,
is true for you as well?
Not the visuals. Just
No, that's, I mean, that is probably a bad word.
Yeah, exactly.
Luster is just, it's full of luster.
Yeah, but just that, you know.
But disappointed a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Depending on what you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Because the tweets that I was getting after it happened, because I was getting tweets from fans right after it aired, and I hadn't had a chance to watch it yet. And they were saying, you know, it was beautiful, it was sweet, it was nice. And, you know, if that's what Julian Fellowes was going for, he achieved that.
And he did. And all that is true. And there was plenty to like. And I did. I enjoyed it tremendously. There was just a few things like, I wish X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
So I have some news and gossip.
Quick,
shall we do that?
We got 5 minutes.
AfterBuzz TV News.
This is a story that broke today. A hacker stole the Downton Abbey series finale script. A hacker who is named Guccifer, or I guess, let's just call it Guccifer because I can't figure it out any other way. His victims include former U.S. presidents and A-list celebrities, hacked into the account of the assistant to Tina Brown from the Daily Beast.
Jeez.
She's the British-born magazine editor, downloaded her 900-name address book, and then proceeded to hack
Julian Fellowes?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Hack Julian Fellowes' email account. Details of the latest victims emerged in a cache of documents passed by Guccifer the hacker to The Smoking Gun, which is a U.S. news website. And it was also said to include fresh information taken from a string of American victims.
Oh, wow.
And Guccifer says, I don't know what the near future holds for me. In case I disappear, it's said that he gave this information to the reporter. So the hacker is being pursued by the FBI. What's weird is that this story of this final script being stolen
came out today.
And it's old news. I mean, it's 2 weeks ago.
Wow. But that's very odd.
But yeah, so interesting. Also, George W. Bush was one of the victims,
What's the point in hacking all these people? What is he getting? Is it Snowden-like? Does he get information? What is?
Well, I think it's more personal information
What else? Anything else?
So since the series has started airing in the U.S., we're hoping that some of our U.S. fans will now have started watching our
podcast. The UK series.
And, you know, sometimes the U.S. airings are different than the
right.
UK.
Right, yeah, they edit them differently. Sometimes instead of two...
They stack two episodes together
and
instead
make them
of
one,
right.
et cetera.
So welcome any American fans who are listening to us, and thank you. This Secrets of Downton Abbey Parade magazine has a couple of interesting things in it. One of them was that it airs 4 months later in the U.S. than it does in the U.K. And Julian Fellowes would not like it to be that way. He would like it to be airing simultaneously. Yeah. I had kind of assumed it was him, but it's not. It's PBS.
I wonder why they do it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know either, because there are all these people. You know, a lot of us knew about Matthew dying before it happened in the U.S. And it was terrible because it really ruined it for us. And, you know, with the internet, it's really hard to miss on things like that. Exactly. Last thing I wanted to say was merchandising. So let's talk about merch. At first, fans could only buy DVDs and calendars, but now merchandising is generating huge dollars.
You brought in wine last
episode. I brought in the wine last episode, and a couple of our fans noticed they liked Courtney and me drinking wine.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, maybe we should do that more often then.
I know. I tried to get some today, but I didn't come here from home. Downton merchandising generated about $24 million worldwide last year. Mm-hmm. Industry experts estimate global sales could reach a minimum of $250 million and probably much more.
10 times for last year? Wow.
Well, it's because of things like Cost Plus World Market carrying the wine. Mm-hmm. So obviously big licensing agreements have been happening, and the merchandising has been huge. I mean, I gave Downton Abbey tea for Christmas presents.
Oh,
there were tote bags that came out at Christmas, you know, all that kind of stuff. And with the American contingent loving it so much, and you know, we're big consumers, so we're spending our money on Downton Abbey merch.
There you go, that's our news. That's terrific. All right, we don't have any predictions.
Let's talk predictions.
All right,
and
you
now,
start.
Well, we kind of talked about some of it with Edith, with, you know, what's going to happen with the baby. I think it's not going to be smooth sailing.
Well, of course it was. It's Edith.
Exactly. So. I think she's going to continue with her alliance with Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Sarah will not be welcomed back next series.
Really?
Sarah Bunting?
Wow, okay.
I think Julian Fellows reads message boards too, or has people who read message boards for him.
All right.
And I think, well, I mean, this is sort of obvious, but the manhunt, the
for Mary's
let
men?
The battle commence
yeah.
for Mary's death beat
Mary,
is
Mary
going
men.
To be is going to get, you know,
is
really
you
going to
make a prediction
up.
On which one of the three?
I think it's going to be Blake.
Whoa.
Boom.
Then I'm going to Gillingham just to be different.
Okay.
Somebody pick
Napier. And
Courtney's
going to say Napier.
There you go. Yeah. All right.
Other than that, you know, I just hope for great, lovely things.
Yeah, I hope we find out what the heck this whole Baxter thing is. And it better be good.
It better be good.
I don't want it to disappoint, like, the whole Bates thing.
Yeah, the other thing is I think there will be some resolution with Bates because I don't think they can just let that lie, but I'm pissed about it.
Okay.
I'm just going to go on record and say I'm pissed.
I
have a new video that's out.
All right, we'll let them know about it before we leave.
It's TamaraCentral.com. If you click on videos, I've got a new half-hour video out that's fun and entertaining, and you can learn something from it. Please watch it. It's on YouTube. Watch it, like it, share it, and comment. I really appreciate it. Okay. You can also find me on Twitter.
Where can they find the video?
If you go on my website, it's TamaraCentral, TamaraCentral.com. There's a click place where you can go to videos,
great.
And it's
okay.
right there at the top
video.
So
do
there.
That, please.
At Tamara Berg on Twitter. Thanks, everybody. It's been a wonderful season. I
great
appreciate it.
Great talking to you. We will talk to you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. Cup of tea, glass of wine.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.
Thank you for watching AfterBuzz TV on YouTube. For more of your favorite after shows and interviews, subscribe to our channel here. And be sure to share your opinion on the episode in the comment section below here. We'd love to see what you guys are buzzing about. Thanks again. Buzz you later.